Okay, welcome everybody. It is February 25th. We think it's the 10th class of the year. It very well could be the 11th, but we'd like to talk to you about the legacy of the Vilna Gaon. Last week, we spoke about the Vilna Gaon himself and also a little bit about his accomplishments, but the Vilna Gaon really had a tremendously profound impact on the Jews. I mean, just all the different forms of Judaism that came about had been impacted by the Vilna Gaon either directly or indirectly. So the first thing, and today we're all, I guess, either products or we'll see how he affected everybody. But really, so rarely has it been such one person that has made such a contribution. Yes.
Just can you give me a back? I wasn't here last week. What time period did you go on?
So good question. The Vilna Gaon was born in 1720. And he died in 1797. So he lived 77 years. His time period spans basically most of the 1700s, the 18th century.
That's the Age of Enlightenment.
The Age of Enlightenment, and believe it or not, they take credit for the Gra, and the Hasidic movement also has indirectly was definitely. Definitely affected by the Gra as well, and the Yeshiva movement, the Gra, the Gaon Reb Eliyahu. When we say the Gra, the Gaon Reb Eliyahu, sometimes just known as the Gaon, or the Vilna Gaon, because he was from Vilna. Okay, the Vilna Gaon went on a exile. Now he left his house twice. One, they guess in his 30s, maybe early 30s, and one when he was about 40.
He left his
family. Now, the first time in his 30s, he went on a self-imposed gullus. And basically, he made his way into Germany. And then when his cover was blown, and they figured out all who he was, it was now a triumphant march back, because every place he stayed, they all wanted to see and know, they wanted to meet the Gaon, the great, great Gaon. Okay? So that's going to happen. So it's spoken about by his sons, Rav Avram, in Sefer Saras Eliyahu. He speaks a little bit about the Gullus. I'm sorry, yes?
Do we know why he chose to do
that? That's a great question. Do we know why did he want to go on a gullus? So I don't think they know exactly, but we'll see from here that there probably were three reasons that he went on the gullus. And just as we're going to read different things. One was probably a kapara, for averes. And it was a common thing for people to do it. Great people would go on these types of exiles for short times. And an exile that, instead of having to go have a punishment, for a certain averus, so you did an exile, and this should be the kapara, okay? A second could be also to know what's out there. You want to know what's doing among the masses. Often, people that live like in the high society and they live in their bubble, they have no idea what's going on in the among the common people, among the masses. Fortunate are those that try to find out what's happening among the masses, and that could be also. When he went from place to place, he got a very good feeling of, A, who, what was the story, what is the state of Klal Yisrael. Also, he was able to pick out, like, who the Gedolim were in different areas in different cities.
Really?
He was able to go to wherever place he went. If he saw the rabbi, he would just know, okay, this rabbi is this level and that level. And, you know, so he had an idea on who was who. That's a second, and there's a third reason. Yes?
Was the Haskalah started?
So the Haskalah did not...
And had the Baal Shem Tov already come?
Yeah, the Baal Shem Tov already was... Okay, I'll get back to the Baal Shem Tov. We'll talk about
this. These are percolating out in the world. You
right.
You should go out to find out what the masses are doing.
Right.
I'm thinking
okay.
This is what's
so
going on.
In general, he went west, okay? And the Hasidic movement was east,
okay?
The Haskalah would be, it's not, it was in very, very beginning.
Right.
It wasn't really taking, it wasn't a thing yet. So Haskalah, but was going to become bigger later. The third reason why he may have gone on, and we'll see one of the reasons that why he went on this Gullah. So again, the first is Kapara, sins. Second one is to see the masses and to figure out who Gedolim were. The third reason is because to find and look at rare texts, manuscripts. He can go into different, all these different places and shuls and areas. And the one thing he would do is if he'd see a different type of a sefer or a different gemara, midrashim, gadol, different things, he would look through it. I mean, again, he was a genius beyond genius. He could look at things and boom, he realized, interesting, this gemara has a different text than all the others, you know. Most of the Gemaras then were already printed, so once it's a printed Gemara, it's the same, but if he found things that were handwritten, or maybe there were Gemaras that were printed that were not his, so not his print. And he's going to be one of these, he's going to make a lots of many changes in the Gemara, and or texts, both in Nistar and Nigla. And it's like, when he makes a change, it's going to be like light and day of court. Wow, look at that. Look at what he accomplished. We're going to talk about this. So those three reasons why he went, to look at texts, people, and kapara. Okay, as you can see, in his travels during his going to gain fame, as the people, wherever he went, they observed his extraordinary genius. Okay, that was mainly on the way back. He made his way all the way into Germany. How far he would have gone, I don't know, but that's when he was exposed. That's when they figured him out. And then, that's it. He started back, and every place he went, they all wanted to see him and meet him and greet him. By nature, the Gro was a very private introvert. He didn't, of course, he had Talmidim, and we'll see about his Talmidim, but he wasn't like the public person to go out and greet himself. This is from Rabbi Yonis and Eibershitz. Now, Rabbi Yonis and Eibershitz himself had a tremendous controversy with Rabbi Yaakov Emden. Rabbi Yonis and Eibershitz himself was accused of being a secret Sabbatean follower, a Shabbat Tzvi follower. And this machlokus ravaged the Jewish world, the frum world. It destroyed, it was a terrible, terrible machlokas. It was Rabbi Yaakov Emden and Rabbi Yeshua Falk on one side and Rabbi Yaakov Emden on the other. And the Gra did get, the Rabbi Yonis and Eibershitz wrote a sefer of all of those rabbis that supported him. Okay, and then Rabbi Yaakov Emden wrote a sefer knocking down that sefer. So, you know, it's to that. But in the sefer of Rabbi Yonis and Eibershitz, he sent somebody to the Vilna Gaon to get his support. And he has a letter that the Gra is in support of him. But the other side said that letter was a forgery.
Really?
So, you know, you go... whatever that's worth. Ooh, good save. So the letter was a forgery. So in terms of that machlokas, Rabbi Yonasan Iverson held he was on his side, and Rabbi Yaakov Emden held he wasn't on Rabbi Yonasan. Okay. So Rabbi Yonasan Iverson, he ended up in, actually Luchas HaEdus is the sefer that he wrote all of his Edus, all those that were on his side that supported him. So in this sefer, he writes about the Gra. So he's writing about the Gra, about this, and this is the letter I got from him. Okay, and again, the other side felt it was not a real letter. The unequaled and holy pure chassid, the light of Israel, who embodies all areas of wisdom, astute and knowledgeable, who possesses 10 measures of broad knowledge and science of Kabbalah, our master Rebbe Eliyahu, may Hashem protect him. Now, again, Rebbe Yonasan Iverson was a leading rabbinic figure. He was, and this is what the way he refers to the Gra. May Hashem protect him, whose praises are known throughout the entire country of Poland and in Berlin and Lisa. That's how he made it to Berlin. That from Vilna to Berlin, that's how far he went. Wherever this chassid traveled, they recount his extraordinary accomplishments. Okay, and that was by Rabbi Yonasan Iverson. The story is told, the scholars of the Academy of Berlin presented before the Gaon difficult and profound questions in the field of mathematics, and they were put in by his answers. He was in Berlin, he was saying by some rug, and people coming in and out, asking him questions and everything. Next to him, next house, was one of the professors of math in the University of Berlin. He says, "My high, what's going on here?" He didn't say my high, that's what he said, "What's going on here?" He said, like, "What's going on?" They said, "This is this great genius of a genius." So he says, "Fine, let's find out." So he came over, and through the aid of somebody, because the girl only spoke Yiddish, didn't speak German, with the aid of somebody else, he presented the Gra some mathematical question or equation that was unsolvable. So once the Gra understood the question, he took out paper and he started writing his charts, his whatever, his formulas, whatever, and handed it to the professor. The professor took a look at it. I mean, like in a short time. It wasn't like he had to think about it. He just, oh yeah, and he wrote it out, handed it to him. And the professor was amazed. Took it to all. He realized, oh my gosh, he answered the question. He figured it out. He ran to the university to get students and other professors to come back to greet the Gra. But by that time, the Gra had left. So I guess it didn't have anything to do with it. But that's at least how the version of the story, the way I heard it.
Wow.
So, and it's even today. I think it's called the Kramerian theory or Kramerian. I think his last name was Kramer or whatever, but that's what it's known as in the world of mathematics. Some theory, I'm not sure I'm right 100%, but I think that's what I remember one time hearing. It's known that this is a theory or answer out there to an equation that was attributed to the Gra. Even today, it's there. Okay, this is what, again, just once you're into the sciences and maths, this was by one of his, a diet in Minsk, and he wrote in his preface to the translation of Euclid, I'm not sure, okay, but he writes, "Behold, when I was in the magnificent city of Vilna, by the Gaon."
Euclid was a geometrist.
Okay, yeah, okay, so, okay, and he says, "The famed Chassid Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Eliyahu, in the month of Teves, 1778, I heard directly from his holy mouth that the extent that a person is deficient, this is what the Gra told him, in other branches of wisdom, he will be deficient a hundredfold in the wisdom of Torah. For the Torah and science are intertwined together. He instructed me to translate into Hebrew as many works of wisdom, mathematics, and science as possible, in order that the members of our people of Israel shall gain wisdom from sources that are now only available in a foreign tongue. For the nations rage against us like a torrent of water and ask, where is their wisdom? And it leads to the desecration of the name of heaven." This is a time in the 1700s, 1800s, where all the universities were, the universities were coming about, and they were also developing theories, and science was making leaps and bounds, and medicine, philosophy, well, I don't know about philosophy so much, more practical things, sciences and maths. And basically the Jewish people at the time, they were into Torah, So they weren't familiar with sciences and maths, and the Gruff felt that, first of all, if the Jews are going to have to learn other tongues, then they're going to be influenced negatively. We're going to see that that exactly is what happened with the Reform and the Haskalah, once they had to go out and he said, if it's possible, he told this Baruch Shik of Shklov, to, if you know these sciences and math, translate it in Hebrew, so that the Jewish people could learn the sciences, know the Chachma. Because here we're supposed to be the Amanif, you know, the Amanif, the Am Chachma, the wise and, you know, nation, and we don't know all the, you know, sciences and all the wisdom that the Goyim knew. That's what he, now, based on this exact letter, but along this lines, everybody knew that the Gro was in new sciences and math. We had a letter, a prefix from Rabbi Yisrael of Shklov, the Pasa Shulchan. He says that towards the end of the Gro's life, when he finished his commentary on Shir HaShirim, he was one of those times that he spoke openly, and he spoke, and he was speaking about all the different sciences and how important it is to know. He said, in music, he says, if you don't know music, you can't understand Shir HaShirim, you can't understand many parts of Zohar. You can't, just, these wisdoms, these disciplines are so important to Torah. Based on this understanding, this was also an impetus, this was like a an impetus or a motivation for the secular, for the Reform and the Haskalah. They see, you see, the Gra agrees with us. Now that's, believe it or not, that's what they were saying, you know, because take a look. Now, the Vilna Gaon was able to get away with all this, and Kabbalah and everything, because everything that he knew was only for Torah.
Right.
That's the main part of it. And we'll see in another letter, I have that's the main thing. Don't just, you know, go for the science and math, which is just the nothing. It's just like the scent of the main thing, and that's what the secular did. They went just for the, and they forgot the main Torah. So only once you have the Torah, then you use these disciplines to help you. I think it may be even in this one. This is Reb Yaakov Tzvi Meckelberg in the Ksav Kabbalah. He writes, how unintelligent and sinful, and this is exactly what the secular, the fools of this generation, who after just sniffing the smell of secular knowledge, consider themselves to be like Haman and Darda. These were old intellectuals of antiquity. See Malachim Aleph. But in reality, they're truly deficient. Behold, a Goyim should be a model for them, a holy man of God who is also revealed the secrets of other branches of wisdom. He was well acquainted with them and became deeply attached to them only as a part of his extraordinary love of Hashem and his Torah, which was manifested with sanctity and purity throughout his life, which is the true essence of a person's life. All those who deviated from the true spirit of the sermon should learn from him. In other words, they just took the secular part. Oh, yeah, you see, he knew secular and he was, you know, pro-learning. But that's only once you have Torah, and only you're using it to help you with Torah. That the Torah part they gave up on. Again, the exile. Okay, and towards the end of the story, Brian brought down his old Shlug. So he got very, very tired and very weak, and he wanted to get back. So he hired a wagon driver, and he gave him extra money. He says, "Look, I daven, I take a long Shmon Esrei. So I want you to wait. Hey, I'm paying you extra to wait for me to finish Shmon Esrei, you know, along the time when he has to daven." Well, he done, well, one time, he did give an additional fee, so he should wait while it, okay. One time while the Goyim was standing and davening for an Esrei, the coach driver just had enough. He said, "This is too long." He drove off carrying up all the Goyim's belongings, leaving him destitute. When he finally returned home, the Goyim continued his Torah studies, enduring tremendous pain. But all right, so he lost all his belongings, whatever he had with him, and that's it. He just continued learning. Just in a very similar story, I heard he found himself in some city Purim. And he missed the Megillah reading. And he felt that he wanted to have the Megillah reading with a minyan. So who didn't hear Megillah reading? Like poor beggars, you know?
Mm.
So he went to the beggars and he paid them. He says, look, I'll pay you. Just listen to me laying the Megillah. I'll lay the Megillah. Just listen to me so I can do it with a minyan.
Wow.
So he pulled them all into shul and he started to make the bracha. When the beggars heard him make that bracha, and the intensity and the long time it took him to make the bracha, by the time he was finished with the brachas, they all left. It was just, oh no, this is not going to be like one of these quick, you know, Megillah readings. You know, it was going to be one of these, you know. At least that's the way I heard. Again, that's the way I heard. So you hear all these types of stories. It was a time that he was found himself in a Rav's house over Pesach. So again, this is before he was known. The Rav had invited many people from the community that didn't have a Seder, and the Rav was one of them. So he asked, the Rav made the mistake of asking, does anybody, you know, want to, you know, have their own minhag and do something their own way? So the Vilna Gaon said, yeah. So he said, you know, if I could have my own Seder plate, and you know, so he set things up differently than the Rav, which the other guests, they took a look at this. This is how this man treats the Rav. The Rav has his way, and this guy is, and they started like complaining at him and talking down to him. Meanwhile, the Rav said one Dvar Torah, and the Rav also wasn't sure. But the Rav said something, and the Vilna Gaon in like one sentence or two summarized what the Rav said, and said something, and the Rav said, oh, okay, we're not talking about, he realized this person is not the average, he stepped back from the gra, and he was trying to tell the guest, just leave him alone, he's something special. Again, the same type of a story from his exile. This is brought by a Shmuel Luria in the preface of the Sefer Rav Holim by Rav Avram, the son of the Gra. Okay, so this comes from the preface of his son Avram. Rav Avram, the son of the Gra, was intimately familiar with all the various manuscripts of the Midrashim and Haggadot and all of the old rare Tosafos and all the works of the Gaonim. These were archived in the house of his father, the Gaon, who from his youth expended tremendous effort for this holy cause and went into exile and traveled throughout the earth to search for these treasures and to bring these blessings back to his holy dwelling place. So once he knew, you know, what they were, so he had them. And you see the Vilna Gaon, the Gra, on every daf of Gemara, but many dafs of Gemara, you see the Gaius HaGra. He changes, sometimes he adds, takes away, but he amends the Gemara. We'll see, you know, what he did before he amended it, yeah?
So when it says he traveled the world, it really means he went to Europe.
Huh?
He really traveled the whole world during that
age? He went to Europe.
I
mean that was the Jewish world.
Like
I don't think there were too many Jewish texts in Africa, or South America. Right, the Jewish world. The Jewish world.
The world, right?
Right, but he actually, you're right, he went west. Svarim salesmen would come to Vilna and he would, you know, if he'd find, he found out that they're selling old manuscripts, so he would grab them as well. Now the Gaon's influence. They asked the Vilna Gaon, who is it that asked? The Maggid of Divna. So he asked the Vilna Gaon, he says, you know, what do? You sit in your room all day. You don't go out to anybody. Or how could a Rav, maybe even, you know, how does he affect this society? So I guess the Divna Maggid was into Mashalim. So the Gra said, I'll give you a Mashal. I'll explain it in a Mashal. And he says, again, the Divna Maggid asked him, in which way does spiritual influence of the Tzaddik come? And what does it mean that a tzaddik affects the members of his generation? So he says it's analogous to a large vessel, which is surrounded on all sides by smaller vessels. When you pour without stopping to the larger vessel, as the larger vessel fills and overflows, all that you continue to pour will enter into these smaller vessels. But as long as the larger vessel is unfulfilled, and most certainly none of the liquid would reach the surrounding vessels. He says that's it. Every rub has to make himself the best as he could. The better you are, the more you can give to others. Now what he did is he created a base medrash. He created a base medrash. Okay. He created a base medrash of Talmidim. The second time he left his city, he was 40. It may be on a slide a little later. And when he was 40, he decided, told his family he's moving to Eretz Yisrael. That's where he wants to go. He didn't explain why or whatever, but he started to go. About, I think, 2 or 3 months later, he came back. And why did he turn around? He never told anybody, or if he did, it's... But one of the reasons, either they guessed that it was too hard for him to go, maybe he felt that Hashem didn't want him to go, but he ended up turning back. And after he turned 40,
He was going
where? To Eretz Yisrael.
That's what it was about.
Okay, and he turned back. He never made it to Eretz Yisrael. He turned back. And which was also very interesting because the Baal Shem Tov also went to Eretz Yisrael and he also turned back. So I don't know if one has to do with the other, but I'm sure maybe many Gedolim went and go back. It was very, very difficult to get to Eretz Yisrael. And to be able, to, once you're there, to be able to live there. So when he, after he turned 40, he had a new shift. He had a shift in the way he did things. Up until 40, if he was writing Sfarim, he wrote it himself. After 40, he didn't write the Sfarim himself. He had his Talmidim wrote it for him. He then took in Talmidim. Until he was 40, he was basically learning on his own. And then after he was 40, he now created a Talmidim. And about 20, 30 Talmidim, you know, we're going to go through some of them. Now these, the Talmidim were Gaonim, these were great rabbis before they came to the, you know, he's not taking a child, you know, he has tremendously what to give. So they already came to the Vilna Gaon as great, great Gedolim. The number one gadol, of course, we're going to talk about, is going to be Reb Chaim Volozhin. And we are, probably in this room, we're all probably directly coming from the Gra and the Vilna Gaon. I'm sorry, the Gra and the Reb Chaim Volozhin, as we'll see. But what he did is, in his base medrash, in his base medrash, the first thing is like, if anybody would come and see him daven, they were tremendously inspired. They were astounded that a human being could reach such a level of love for Hashem as they saw how each and every word of his prayers would be articulated in sanctity and purity with pure intention. Okay, say every syllable. Again, this is from Reb Avram and Reb Leib, the sons of the Vilna Gaon. Okay, they continued. Fortunately, Yuvilna, through his advice and rebuke, it became a great community of disseminators of Torah. The Gra would say something was taken so seriously that it made a tremendous impression. The story that was told, the Gra was on his way somewhere. It wasn't an exile. He had to leave. He had to go to a certain place. I forgot the name of the place. And he stayed. He had to stay overnight in a certain place. And they gave him an attic. And what would happen is the entire town, they had a ladder at the window. And the entire town, every 5 or 10 minutes, would go up and they'd watch the Gra, and then they'd have to come down, and the next person would go up. So we all know the way that story goes is that the Gra would sleep for 2 hours in a day, half an hour at a time, 3 at night, 1 half an hour during the day. That's it. So when he was up there, so people would watch him learning, and every 15 minutes or whatever, 10, 15, he would go down, the next person would go up, and then one person would go up, and the girl would start to sleep. So he'd say, stop the clock, the girl is sleeping. And then the girl woke up, and he said, oh my gosh, it's 33 minutes, this must be a sleepy town. That's what he said. The guy who's on the ladder who heard this told everybody else. The Gross said that this is a sleepy town. And they decided, that's it. We're going to just, you know, be mizaris ourselves and learn Torah better and do mitzvahs better. Right? So the Gross left the next day, you know, and he, on his way back to Vilna, he stayed there again. And then, the same thing happened. You know, the girl was in the his attic learning, and every 15 minutes somebody would come up, and sure enough, somebody was up there, and the girl fell asleep. And they said, stop the clock. The girl's sleeping, you know. He waited his turn, and when the girl woke up, he said, 27 minutes. Ooh, this town must be a really, a real Zariz type of a town, a real energetic town. So at least that's the way the story was told. But just what the Grow would say, people would take it seriously, very seriously. Okay. This is a very interesting letter. Okay, Rev Avram Zakheim, I'm not sure who he is, but there was a German language periodical, again, I'm not familiar with it, which is called The Orient. Now, the publishers or the people of The Orient wanted this publication, I don't know if it's a newspaper or a periodical, but they wanted to distribute it in Vilna. So they asked this Rabbi Avram Zakheim, how, you know, could it be done? What do we have to do? Now notice the date. Now this date that Rabbi Avram Zakheim is telling them that he doesn't think that it would be a good idea. It's not going to be successful here, but the date is in Elul 24 in 1840. The Grub passed away in 1797. So the Grub passed away over 40 years earlier. Mm. And now this is the letter that he sent to the people, the people of the Orient. Your Honor should know that there are very few people in our country who would enjoy these publications. For the nature of the members of our community is different from those of Germany. For over the last century, from the time the sun arose in its glory and the clouds spread its light, the man of God, who is known throughout the world, our master, the Gra, Zecher Tzadik Lebracha, and his many disciples shone and radiated like stars. Their upright conduct still leaves an impression till this day. Their lamp has not ceased giving forth light and will not cease for eternity. They implanted faithful teachings in the hearts of the brethren, great diligence and powerful desire to study Torah and its laws arrive at the truth. He commanded every person, large and small, businessmen, craftsmen, to consecrate a portion of their time to study Torah. It is utterly amazing how his efforts bore such lush fruits. This is the state of this country and its fruits at this time. Mm. So this is, he's saying, your orienting is not for this place. And this is why? Because 40 years ago, there was the Vilna Gaon, and him and his disciples put in the minds and hearts of all these people just to learn Torah, your publication won't do well. Just you see the effect of him. Okay, he was a master teacher. Now, ultimately the master teacher with all his students, we mentioned it last time, his number one student, the Reb Chaim Volozhin, came to the Gro one time and he said to him, I have a great idea, I'd like to start what we would today call the yeshiva. Okay, there was always yeshivas, but the idea that all the boys would be in the same base medrash and they would all be learning the same Gemara and they'd be eating at the same schedule and they would just the structure of our yeshivas today, that was what Rav Chaim Volozhin had in mind, and that's exactly what he did. So he told the Gra, and the Gra was cool about the idea, didn't say yes or no. Rav Chaim Volozhin didn't understand what was wrong. If the Gra didn't say yes, he's not going to do it. Thought about it again, came back to the Vilna Gaon and he says, listen, Rebbe, I don't understand what's wrong with the idea. And the Gra says, no, it's a great idea. But when you came with such enthusiasm, I wasn't sure if it was motivated by the proper purest of thoughts. But now I see that you're level-headed and go for it. And in fact, that's what he did. He created the yeshiva, was known as the Volozhin Yeshiva. He sent letters far and wide. And he said to all the communities, he says, I am going to do the fundraising. I'm in charge of fundraising, and I'm also going to be the leader. Send me your best and brightest. That's basically what they did, and they sent. And it was open from 802, 803, I'm not sure when a few years after the Vilna Gaon passed away, he opened the yeshiva. I believe enclosed in 1899 or one of those years, and the last Rosh Hashiva was the Netziv. And I may even have a letter here, but the Netziv of Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, that was his name. He was the last Rosh Hashiva, and he closed the yeshiva because of the secularists. They told the Russian government wanted to enforce secular studies. And it was ridiculous, but because of the amount of time you had to devote to secular studies and everything else, you'd only be able to learn about an hour or two a day. So that was like, it was just, so Naftali, the Netziv, rather close the yeshiva rather than submit. That's it. If we can't do the yeshiva the way the Vilna Gaon, the way Rav Chaim Volozhin set, then that's it. We have to close it. What you see, what ended up happening was it really saved the yeshiva world. Throughout the years, as the Talmidim of the Volozhin yeshiva got older and bigger and stronger, they went out to open up yeshivas on their own. I don't know, Rodin, I don't know, came directly, but whether it was Tells or Brisk or Slutsk or Kletsk or Mir or Slobodka and Novartek, and every one of the yeshivas in Europe can go ahead and trace their rebbes, their rebbeim, the Rosh Hashivas, the Mashkichim, all learnt in Volozhin. So the Volozhin yeshiva is the what we call it today, even the Eim HaYeshivas, the Eim HaYeshivas, the mother of all the yeshivas, because all the yeshivas came, maybe with the exception of the Chassam Sofer, Moshe Sofer, the Chassam Sofer Pressburg yeshiva. I don't think the Moshe Sofer ever learned from in the Volozhin yeshiva. That was Hungary as opposed to Poland. But all the yeshivas today, every one of the yeshivas today could all trace their ways back to the Gra. I could do it myself. My Rebbe was Rav Henoch Leibowitz, Zechat Tzadok Lavracha, the Rosh Yeshiva of Chavetz Chaim, and his Rebbe was his father, Rav David Leibowitz, and his Rebbe was the Altar of Slobodka, and his Rebbe was the Altar of Kelm, Simcha Ziv, and his Rebbe was Rav Yisrael Salanta, and his Rebbe was Rav Zundel Me Salant, and his Rebbe was Rav Chaim Volozhin. So the Chavetz Chaim goes right back in, and all the yeshivas can do it. Every yeshiva can do it. You know, all the yeshivas today are all transplanted yeshivas from the Volozhin yeshiva, and they could all trace their way all the way back to the Volozhin yeshiva, to the Gra.
Just to clarify, you said something about the Russian government. So in his lifetime, Vilna fell under the Russian Empire at that time?
No.
No.
It happened, yes, it did. I'm not sure.
Okay.
In 1792, there were three times that the Russian government took over Poland. One of them was 1792, and one of them was 1797-98. So one of them was 1792, he was still alive. I'm not sure if that was the last, and Vilna was then under the Russians, or it didn't happen until later. Poland-Lithuania was really at that point, even though it may have been somehow two separate, it was one big country. It was ruled by the same ruler. Didn't break off until later.
They
originally
states.
Separate, and then they came together under one king, but they had their own separate houses of legislation, legislator houses. Okay, so again, Master Teacher. Anything he did was only before the age of 40. Afterwards, when he was older, it was through Talmidim. Okay, this is how he taught his students to learn the proper way. And this is the way he instructed it. This is going to be from, again, his sons, Rav Avram and Rav Levi. Besides his own intellectual achievements, he instructed the people in the knowledge of Torah. He strengthened them and encouraged them to study in a proper order. Again, they're coming to him already as gedolim. They're already tremendously learned Talmidei Chacham. And so, that they don't lose their footing, they have to first of all serve Hashem properly. They have to be familiar with the 24 books of Tanakh. And then also the science of grammar. Grammar is crucial. If you don't know grammar, then you're going to miss nuances in the psukim. How many times does it say, like for example, just throwing one of many things, it's a Rashi, it says, when it comes to Har Sinai, it says, Vayichan Sham Yisrael Neged Ahar. And the Jews encamped around the mountain. Now, if you know grammar, it should be Vayachanu. It should be they encamped. It says he encamped. Vayichan Sham Yisrael Neged Ahar. And he encamped around the mountain. What do you mean he encamped? It should say Vayachanu and the Jews and they encamped. The Rashi over there says, you know why it says in the singular, Rashi knew grammar. And it says Vayichan, it was because Ke'ishachad Belevachad. You see, we all know this. And that's Ke'ishachad Belevachad, like one man, one heart. One man, one heart, it's Vayichan. So you, if you don't, once you know grammar, then you could know all the psukim and why is there, why is the grammar off? Why is it using a different text, a different, is it female or male? Or why is it using the third person or the different forms? Is it Nifal or Paul or PL? It's very, very important. Once you got through Tanakh, then and grammar, then you do the sixth order of Mishnayos. When he went there, yeah, you have to learn Mishnayos then. And he shared with them new insights. He also had his gear, so this is the correct words, and this is the way it should be read. Once he got that, then he went to Talmud, the Gemara. He would make sure that you have to do Gemara with Rashi. And the reason why, because Rashi is very straightforward. There's no pilpul, there's no drushes. That's the most simplest way of understanding. He also then made them understand using Tosfos. And also, he was very, very much against the approach of pilpul. You see, up until we mentioned this in the last year, the year before, that in Poland, when the Jews came in mass to Poland, the type of learning that attracted people was called pilpul. We don't have it today, and that was a revolution from the Gra. Already it was in decline, but the Gra, the way he learned is simple pshat, we're looking for truth. Pilpul is you build up a whole bunch of questions and you try to come up with an answer to, you know, but not necessarily it's true, but it could answer a whole bunch of questions and it looks like, you know, it's like a flashy type of learning. The Hasidim were very against this too, because when pilpul is more about you, as opposed to about what the Torah really means. Okay, so it's not about the, and he was very against pilpul, and he made sure that you learn, this is the way to learn, and you start from the bottom up.
Isn't that like a lot of hypotheticals and things that you create?
Correct,
you just
correct, yeah.
Make logical arguments
right,
that lead
right,
to nowhere,
right.
But
what's missing, what's between the lines, as opposed to what's really it said. Yeah. Okay, Yosef desired to, when he told them to write things down, he told them a lot more, but they, you know, only wrote down like a little bit of it, you know, so it wasn't like everything you see of his Pshat on Mishlei was written down for his Talmidim. He told them a lot more than just what the Talmidim wrote down. Okay, he would arrange his schedules in such a way. And a few short years, they would be fluent in the entire Talmud and would know the source of the practical halacha and the teachings of the Abba Turim perfectly. Mm-hmm. And this is the way he taught them. This is the mahalach that, again, Reb Chaim Volozhin, who was the number one of all the students, picked up on this, and this is the way he taught the yeshivas today. So even if you may hear it like the word pilpul shir, it's not the pilpul of yesteryear, it's just the pilpul meaning a deeper understanding of answering, you know, the mafarshim based on the simple pshat of the Gemara. Okay, recognize, okay, again, this is about pilpul. Now we get to Reb Chaim Volozhin. You see how Reb Chaim Volozhin talks about the Gra. He says, number one, the first disciple was Reb Chaim. When he came to stand before him to hear directly from his mouth the words of the living God, the spirit of his father spread over a sharp mind. Once he saw the Gra, he decided to stay. I think it was, this story is told that the Gra went to a relative's wedding. And the wedding was like Erev Shabbos. And with all the preparations that needed to be done, the Gra was left alone. And Reb Chaim Volozhin, who knew about the Gra, he went to the wedding, I think, more to see the Gra than anything else. He found time to be with the Gra. And that's the first time he brought hot water for him and helped him, you know, get washed for Shabbos. And that's, I think, the first time he spoke to the Gra. He was 19 years old, the Reb Chaim Volozhin. And he said to him, I went through Moed 19 times, and I still don't feel I know it so well. So the Gra said, you got to review it more, you know. Only 19 times, you know. Basically, you know, chazara. Just 19 times is a good start, you know. Like, but you have to know. I mean, we'd go through Moed like the Reb Chaim Volozhin would have gone through once. We would probably, you know, it would be amazing. But that's at least that's how the initial, the first time he met, he asked him such a question, and basically the Reb Chaim Volozhin stayed. It was him and his brother. He had a brother we mentioned last time, his brother Zalman, that was also his younger brother. He was just as smart and great as him, but he died young when he was 33. Here are the Reb Chaim and Zalman. Okay? Then Reb Chaim says, my heart is filled with awe whenever I speak about him. Whenever I think about the sanctity of the light of his Torah, his piety, his purity, his humility, my entire body trembles. And that's what Chaim Volozhin said it in the preface to the Gross commentary of Sifra de Tzinusa. My accompaniment, Reb Chaim Volozhin said it in the commentary to the Zohar, it could be the same Sefer. My accomplishments are very minor, as I didn't have the merit to taste the sweetness of the words of our master, the Holy Goan, even to the extent which a dog laps from a lake. That's all I got from the Gross. This is, I mentioned before, of the Netziv. So Netziv wrote a letter to Reb Yosef Zachariah Stern, chief rabbi of Shavel, in 1875. So again, the yeshiva will close 20 some odd years later. How can I forge a new road in my old age to change? The only effect of the proposed compromise with the Maskilim would be to uproot the foundation which the Tzaddikim laid more than 80 years ago. Okay, so he's referring to 1875, that 80 years ago would have been, just about when the Vilna Gaon passed away, about when the Volozhin Yeshiva would have started. Huh? Yes, they're the Enlightenment. They're the ones that instigated the government to close down the yeshiva. I mentioned before, it was a big growth for the yeshivas because when the Netziv closed the yeshiva, there were about 400 students in the yeshiva. 400 students. And when the yeshiva closed, when the Volozhin yeshiva closed, what happened to those 400 students? So they went to all the other yeshivas in Europe. So maybe 20 went here, and 30 went here, and another 50 went there. And all the yeshivas got a boon, because who went to the Volozhin? The top of the top, right. Except everybody in Volozhin. In order to make it to Volozhin, you had to be already a great, great student. You had to be up there. And then all the yeshivas picked up from all these 400. They all went to all these different yeshivas, and it was a tremendous, tremendous boon to all these yeshivas. So on the one hand, you know, you're trying to wipe out Torah with the Haskalah. You know, this is such an example where Hashem turned, you know, what they try to do against them. And this was It strengthened Torah all over Europe. Okay, the Volozhin Yeshiva was not there anymore. I guess that for the Jewish people, we would have rather had the Volozhin Yeshiva, because the overflow would go to the other yeshivas. But in a different sense, all the talents and all the lumbus and learning all went directly to the other yeshivas. Okay, it says the majority of authority transferred to a disciple, the Holy Master, the true Goyim Rav Chaim Volozhin. He was the number one. Okay. Here's a list of all of some of his other Talmidim. Rav Shlomo, the chief rabbi of Okamar, was, I believe, number two. Number three would have been Shlomo Zalman, the brother of Rav Chaim. Number four was Rav Sadia. Number five was Rav Goyim Rav Moshe Shlomo of Tlushin. Number six was Svi Hirsch of Samatitz. Number seven, Rav Shlomo of Molev. And it's just
so
like
these. They would have been the 1800s then, these people?
Yeah. I mean, they were younger than the Gra.
Right,
so again, the Gra was already 40 when he took in Talmid, and they could have been anywhere from when he was 40 to 77. So
okay.
At some point along the way, they became students. The renowned Rav Simcha Bunim, Rav Nachum Mendel of Shklov. Fine children is okay. There is. I do want to get to. This is Rabbi Yisrael of Shklov. Rabbi Yisrael of Shklov. We mentioned, and this is that he wrote the Pasa Shulchan, and the Pasa Shulchan is a halachic sefer for Eretz Yisrael, all about Trumas and Maestros and how to deal with the halachas there. He originally, when the Vilna Gaon passed away, about 200 of his students and families, there was about 200, they ended up going to Eretz Yisrael, and they originally moved to Sfat. In 1836, there was a terrible earthquake there, and scores, maybe even over 100 people died. Not only from the Jews, everybody. And the Talmidei HaGra there said the reason they understood this to be a punishment that they chose Sfat over Yerushalayim. And from that moment on, the Ashkenazic community moved from Sfat to Yerushalayim. This was a community that really started in Yerushalayim. They were the beginnings of the Ashkenazic community in Yerushalayim. Before they moved there, Ashkenazim, I mentioned this last time, weren't able to establish their own community because 100 years ago, in the early 1700s, there was a group of from Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. He also came with about a few hundred, and he ended up with 200-300 Jews, and it was the whole thing fell apart. He died shortly after he got to Eretz Yisrael. The Jews that were there incurred tremendous debts, and then they disbanded. And all the Arabs that lent the money wanted the money back. And they blamed the Ashkenazi community. So any Ashkenazi that would come to Yerushalayim, they would say, you owe us $58,000, whatever, we want it now. Right. So the Ashkenazim had to be part of the Sephardic community. Somehow, I guess, 130 years later or so, they forgot it, or they forgave it, or they ignored it. And when this Ashkenazic community came, they started anew. Once they started new, so they instituted a lot of the things from the Gra, from the Vilna Gaon. And I'll just mention two or three things that even today they do. One of the things that the Ashkenazim do in Yerushalayim is, what do we do every day in Eretz Yisrael?
Duchen.
The Vilna Gaon, at one point, the way I heard it, in Vilna, why are we not duchening every day? And they started, the Gra says, okay, let's duchen. And they duchened one day, and some terrible tragedy happened. And then they duchened the second day, a second tragedy happened, and the Gra said, okay, forget it. Hashem doesn't want us to duchen here. But when they got to Eretz Yisrael, the community said, well, there's no established Ashkenazic customs here. We are going to follow the Gra, and that was one of them. They started to duchen every day. So the Ashkenazim in Eretz Yisrael, Yerushalayim, I think all of Eretz Yisrael now, and that comes from the Gra.
Sorry, what is tiduchen?
Oh, I'm sorry, Berchat Kohanim. Berchat Kohanim. Svarim, they do it here. They always did it. Weekdays, everything, but the Ashkenazim only did it on Yontif, only in Musaf on Yontif, and only if it doesn't come out on Shabbos. That's the only time that we duchen, we berachat kohanim. But
Svarim do it every day?
Svarim every Shabbos. That's correct.
Shachris.
Every day in Shachris. Including
Yeah.
Here, yeah, all over. That's it. They always do it. So we, and that, but in Eretz Yisrael because of the Gra. Anything else? Does anybody know what else?
Early Shabbos.
Oh, very good. Early Shabbos. Up until the Gra, but that I think even came in Europe. Up until the Vilna Gaon, it seemed that most of the Ashkenazic Jewry followed Rabbeinu Tam. And the Gra came along and he says, I think he came out and most of the halachic opinions held like the Magen Avraham, and therefore we today we don't follow the Rabbeinu Tam. We follow more the Magen Avraham, and we and I think in Eretz Yisrael they give like Shkia's. What is it? 15 minutes. I forgot what the number is, but they daven Meir. They could daven Meir rather early. I don't know if it's an Eretz Yisrael thing or something they get from the Gra, but that's also they daven Meir right after Shkia. So they may have to repeat Shema. I'm not sure.
No, when I look in the morning, there's Meir.
That's the Magen Avraham. So we follow the Magen Avraham, right? I'm sorry, not the Magen Avraham. The Gra. We follow the Gra. I'm sorry if I'm saying Magen Avraham. Right. So the Gra has his sunrise, sunset. Right. That's another thing. Another thing from Eretz Yisrael is they do not say in Ma'ariv, Baruch Hashem le'olam amein v'amein. That also comes from the Gra. Another thing that comes from the Gra is not wearing tefillin on Chol HaMoed. Okay, I guess many Ashkenazim do wear tefillin, but the Gra's minhag was not. They came to Eretz Yisrael, they said we're not, there's no established minhag here, we don't wear tefillin. I think there may be one or two others, but if the minhagim of the Gra like reign supreme there, I think that's pretty much what I. Okay, just one last thing in terms of him making changes. Before he would make a change, he would not change a word in the Gemara or any of the Mefarshim unless it would fit with every single Tana and Amora. And I think also if he also would fast, he would, before he would go ahead and make a change, he would fast, it would be a series, he would make sure that every one of his changes that he would change was acceptable and fit every which way. And if he felt it didn't, he wouldn't make the change. That's both in Nigla and Nista. So it was, when you see Haggayas HaGra, many dafin in the Gemara, you see the Gra makes a change. It wasn't flippant. He says, you know what? It sounds better like this. You know, we're just gonna, But it came with extreme scholarship.
These revisions that he's making, are these due to scribal errors through the years?
He believes yes,
okay.
Throughout the years. The Gemara was first written in the year 500 of the Common Era. That's Ravina, Ravashi. That's when they lived. And they started to write for the next like 45 years during their 70 years or so during the Rabban and Savroy. That's basically what they did. They wrote Gemaras and Gemaras and they sent it all out. So from the year 500, the printing press didn't come until to the Jews, to the 1500s. That's 1,000 years of all they did is they had to write and write and write. And they would sometimes pay Goyim to write, you know, they just needed things written. And a lot of errors crept in throughout the years. So even with all the errors that would have crept in, it's still Baruch Hashem, we have the bulk of it, and you know, but sometimes you make such different, he makes changes one word or takes out a word, and like all these difficulties, and everybody's trying to, you know, answer the question, everything just falls apart. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
just look at that. Everything fits in. All right. So the we're all here students of Agra in a sense that, you know, we go down, you know, from all influence from what he did. I'd like to, we have two more times before we change the clock, next week and the week after. I would also like to, so we spoke about the Hasidic movement. Oh, also in terms of the Hasidic movement, he also had a tremendous influence on them in that they had to always answer the Gra. In other words, whatever they thought and whatever their philosophies were and whatever they were putting into practice, they always had to say to themselves, wait a minute, the Gra and they see we're going off the deep end and we're not part of Klal Yisrael, we're not part of the Torah community anymore because we're outside of Halacha. So they always had to stop and think, what would the Gra say about this? And that was like sort of a check to the entire Hasidic movement, which kept them within the circle. There's going to be, I'd like to maybe in the next two times, there's two other movements which are very similar, just came out different, and that's going to be the Reform movement and the Haskalah movement. The Reform movement is going to take place in Western Europe, and the Haskalah movement is going to take place in Eastern Europe. They have similar, but they're going to be very different because culturally, the Western Europe is going to be is different than Eastern Europe, and they're going to come out two different movements. And maybe the next time we'll talk about Rabbi Moses Mendelssohn, who is one of the causes of these movements. I'm really, really over. I see I'm taking a look at the time. Thank you all for coming. I guess I'll take questions afterwards.
As Rabbi Fried said, we have two more weeks. Shabbos is getting a little later every week, and it's more difficult for some of the